Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in communications with classes in online journalism, digital video production, interviewing, and crisis communications. strose.edu/grad.
And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So we're going to take role here at the Media Project. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, present and accounted for. Let's see. Ira Fussfeld?
Yes, I'm Ira Fussfeld, and I was formerly the publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and I'm here.
He's present. Rosemary Arameo?
Present. I'm a professor at the University of Albany, and I love being on the Media Project.
You're the one.
Alan Chartok. Alan? The sound of silence. Yeah. Anyway, we miss Dr. Chartok,
of course.
You're going to
pay for that.
Where is he? Who dares to
We're 35 seconds into the program, and I think the regular listeners would have realized he wasn't here by now because he hadn't spoken in the first 35 seconds.
Okay. Here we go. Anyway, it's the Media Project, a half-hour commentary analysis, and if we're even lucky, some insight into the news media issues of the week. Ira Rosemary and I will be here for you a little bit here. We need to talk a little bit about something that we, of course, individually don't know much about, but we'll still pontificate on as much as we can. That is White House coverage. Here's an interesting thing. There has been a great deal of complaint among the journalists who cover the Obama administration about how the press is handled there. And now the White House Correspondents Association is trying to trying to push forward some practice principles, some notions of how the press ought to be treated that I think go to the question of the independence of the press and how they can actually operate in that environment.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind when I see the complaints by the press about the treatment that the Obama administration gives them is that it's directly contrary to those who believe that the press and Obama have been on some sort of honeymoon for the last six and a half years. The fact is the access to the president has apparently been precious little compared to other presidents, and it frustrates the press greatly. So I'm not sure anybody who from the right who would charge that they're in bed together, they'd find much agreement in Washington.
No, and the Obama administration has been terrible in almost every count as far as journalism, including releasing records, not just making the president accessible. On the other hand, the White House Corps has always had it kind of cushy. I mean, how much easier does it have to be? You sit there and wait for handouts. You go to follow his calendar. Do we even need coverage like that anymore? I think it's time for the media to take a look at what politicians are calling for from them and to do it a different way. We're going to talk about, I think, some campaign coverage today, too. It's the same thing.
Boy, I think you're exactly right, although I would look at it the other way, saying it's difficult to cover the White House just because you're trying to do something and you don't have any way to distinguish your coverage from everybody else. I guess it depends on how aggressive a reporter wants to be, because you can just sit back and take the handouts from the press office.
Do you think that a president has an obligation to have a specific number on a regular basis of press conferences or a regular access to the press?
I think it used to be the view, wasn't it?
I think the president has an obligation because the president can't reach, the general public can't reach the president absent the work of the White House Press Corps, if the president just decides to hole up there. I mean, it's always been that way. Remember when Richard Nixon devised what he was the first person to use the term Rose Garden strategy. He would stay in the Rose Garden. This was in the 72 campaign. And Dan Rather, who was then covering the White House for CBS News, got so that he would do his tags, his out cues on his reports. He'd say, Dan Rather with the Nixon campaign at the White House, mm-hmm. just to make the point that this was the campaign that he was covering, even though it hadn't strayed from the White House.
Well, it puzzles me that Obama doesn't do more because he's good at it. You know, when I think John Kennedy is maybe Ike, but John Kennedy was the first president who had these televised press conferences, and people loved it in general because he was glib and he was young and all the rest. You know, George W. Bush was not good at it, but Obama, when he has the press conferences, seems perfectly capable of thinking on his feet and answering in complete sentences.
I think he's looking at what he gets for the time that goes into one of those press conferences, which is a lot of preparation and getting ready, and you have to read a lot, you have to think about it, and
really?
Instead, it doesn't come across.
Sorry,
you're out of
just
control
let
this week. but I think the president knows that maybe he'd be better spent working on actual policy, and he can deal with communication in a much easier way. He does not need press conferences anymore.
Although I would think that he needs less prep than, say, George W. Bush, who most was generally considered to be not that smart, and Obama has a clear grasp on the issues.
Isn't smartness that shows in those. It's some sort of weird empathy thing that we look for. In fact, smartness can hurt him. It makes him look scholarly or sarcastic and aloof. Smartness has not helped him with, say, for example, Maureen Dowd. So I think he's playing to his strengths. And why should the media? Yes, I'm unhappy that it's there, but I don't think we have any right to it.
But there's another factor, though, that was pointed out by the former Nixon speechwriter William Safire in a column during the George W. Bush administration, who said that the value of White House press conferences for the administration is that it settles policy differences among presidential aides, because in the articulation made by the president of answers to questions, there are internal disputes that are settled. The president's remarks are studied by staffers, and that actually helps to settle what the policy is. That sounds odd until you consider how huge the government bureaucracy is and how subtle differences in policy may make a real difference in how thousands of people do their jobs. So there's a value to that. But now, so to the point that Ira made earlier, though, of this sort of gives the lie to the notion of some sort of complicity between the press corps and the president. Same thing is going on with the Hillary Clinton campaign, where journalists are up in arms about the relationship that Hillary has established with the press corps.
She's roping us off.
Literally, right?
She marched in a 4th of July parade in New Hampshire and had rope separate her front and rear and side from the press, so that while she marched along in the street, there were only her aides and plenty of space so she could be seen. And a lot of the people in the press were offended by it. And I sort of have two minds about it, because I could see a point where if she did not have the ropes, and since she has given the press so little access, that the press would probably try to take advantage of it and swarm around her and thus prevent her from being seen in the parade and interfere with her campaign, in effect. But that said, if she had given the press more access all along, there'd be no need for the rope, because that's the first time I've ever seen something like that.
I thought it was kind of brilliant. I think it's an image. There's reporters kind of corralled like horses that will play well to the public, which doesn't like us, which sees us doing exactly what those reporters were doing, which was swarming her, looking for pictures and sound bites. At one point, they were surrounding her as she was trying to eat with people she was eating at a picnic. I mean, that's not news. What are we doing? I think she's brilliant to do that. On the other hand, she risks retaliation. And I think you saw it, the reviews coming in written by journalists about her first big, I don't think it really is her first big international interview, but it got a lot of press at CNN, really just was vicious against her. And I think some of that is just, okay, you're going to cut us out, we'll get back at you.
Yeah, which is inappropriate, I think. Although nowadays we have a less discipline on the notion of fairness in a lot of the huge media, because the standards aren't the same as the old traditional media that some of us have been a part of course, that we all here sitting in this room have been a part of. Because you have the editor of the Daily Beast, a guy named Noah Schachtman, who said that, who urged his reporters to, quote, write a hit piece if a candidate ever tries to rope you like a cow. Well, I can't imagine an editor urging someone to, yeah, write a hit piece. Come on. That is inappropriate in journalism, whatever, however some degree.
But to voice one small bit of sympathy for the press, we are being hit on both sides on whether we do too much coverage or not enough. Donald Trump, we cover him too much. Bernie Sanders, we don't cover him enough. Hillary, she doesn't give us access. We want to cover her more. How do we determine what's the right amount of coverage?
Well, I don't know. I was going to make the point on Hillary, and I'm not always right. I always tend to give people perhaps more credit than they deserve. And I just think that Hillary and her campaign and the knowledge that they have accrued from the Bill Clinton presidency and then her first run for presidency, which failed, that they learned a lot of lessons there and that she is smart and her people around her are smart and that they go into a campaign like this with calculation that how they're going to interact with the press, how much and how little, and understanding that they are going to be criticized heavily by the press and that they have weighed that versus what right. the plus side for them is. And so I just think that the old there is a method to their madness applies with the Clinton campaign. But I, you know, to your question, you guys are more active now than I am, but I it's a difficult question to weigh, particularly when there are a lot of candidates for the same office. And in these days, when you don't have a lot of resources in your newsroom, as to how much coverage you're going to give. And so you invariably are going to make a value judgment about, well, let's not give that person as much coverage because he or she doesn't really have a chance. So why waste our time?
Mm-hmm. And I actually think you're right. And it goes to Rosemary's point of they know that this will play well in Peoria. If they're seen to be hemming in reporters. By the way, this is not a new tactic. When Rudy Giuliani was the mayor of New York City, at major crime scenes and disasters, there would be a space for the press that would be a block away. And the press would be hemmed in there until, and they would see these ordinary citizens walking by on the street and hear the reporters all trying to yell out, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Mayor. Right. And there he is over there. He was sued more than 36 times by the media. All of them settled in favor of the media on those grounds. So this kind of hostility as a tactic is not unusual. But you raised the point, Rosemary, about Donald Trump. I mean, here's an interesting statistic that CNN has covered Trump more than 400 times on television and on its website since he announced he's running for president. That's more coverage than CNN has given to Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio or Scott Walker or any of the other major GOP candidates, or more than CNN has given to Hillary Clinton. So what is it about Donald Trump that makes him so newsworthy? What do we think?
He's a character. He's blunt. He says stuff that looks like he's pulling out of the sky. He talks in a way that we're not used to hearing politicians talk. And he is already a celebrity based on his own self-promotion for decades. So he's fascinating in that regard. And the media, I don't know how it's translating into newspaper sales or clicks on websites, but the TV news is not only covering him incessantly, but promoting the hell out of it. I mean, as we speak, Anderson Cooper had an interview with him last night that they filled up the program with, but kept spacing it. You know, stay tuned for more. Stay tuned for more. The NBC Nightly News, again, last night as we speak, had an interview with Katie Turr doing the interview, and they promoted the hell out of it. So they know that people are going to watch when he's on. And the question is, when will the public either tire of him or when will the voters from the wing of the Republican Party start holding sway and he becomes more and more marginalized?
I think the public is hugely amused by him. They don't want to deal with a presidential election this early, and with Trump, you don't have to. You're watching entertainment. I have great confidence that the public, the Republican public even, will not pick him as their candidate. But they take that stuff seriously. On the other hand, the media has to cover him. And Frank Bruni, the New York Times, has a really interesting mm-hmm. column on this whole thing. I love that, saying that there's real value in this that maybe we need to look at as the media, that you're showing Trump saying outrageous, even offensive things. And what are the other candidates, the serious candidates, doing? They're not jumping all over him. They're not saying, get out of here, you're a nut, you're ruining our party. Even Jeb Bush, when pressed, only when pressed by reporters, responded to his thing that all the Mexican immigrants were rapists and criminals.
Yeah, the only candidate who really was strong on it, and I give him credit, is George Pataki.
Exactly.
And he, I have no doubt, believes what he said, but he also had to do something because, you know, nobody is watching him. He's at minus one in the polls. So, you know, it
was... nothing to lose.
Yeah, had nothing to lose.
But there's a level of responsibility on the part of the media to make some judgments about the value, about making making this much coverage of a guy just because he's good copy is inappropriate, isn't it?
Well, you know, when we had the guy who campaigned on the rents are too damn high.
Right.
You know, he was he had no chance to win.
McDermott?
Well, I don't recall. But at any rate, he got a lot of coverage because he was perceived as funny and colorful and all the rest, whereas all the other minor candidates got almost no coverage. So those kinds of things are intoxicating to editors and
you can't really say
people.
That's true in this campaign cycle so far. Bernie Sanders, I think, has been getting tons of coverage. Mm-hmm. He also has a very low chance of nabbing the nomination, and yet he's got not just a lot of coverage, but very favorable coverage.
Whereas Jim Webb and O'Malley have gotten almost no coverage. So they have made the distinction again, and the press has made a distinction. Those two guys are not worth as much coverage as Bernie Sanders. And
how do you make that choice, though? Do you make it on the basis of polls? You know, in the Republican polls, Donald Trump is number two among all the 20 candidates. And the polls show that Bernie Sanders is rising, of course, and notwithstanding the notion that we think that he's not going to have any money and he can't really seriously challenge Hillary Clinton. How do you make these judgments?
Well, if we're going to make a judgment and make it clear to people, let's talk about the value of polls this early in an election cycle. Mm-hmm. It's minimum.
This time, 8 years ago, Michelle Bachmann was
exactly.
the top Republican peep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They don't bear reality to what we get to in the final stages of the cycle.
Well, it all shows that there's a lot of judgment involved in this, and oftentimes you get people saying to us, just give us the facts, you know, and let us make decisions. The problem is you can't cover everybody equally. It is our responsibility to make some judgments about what is the news value of something. But in doing that, you're going to offend some people. You're going to make some judgments that, well, it's a human process, journalism.
When you have editorial board meetings during a campaign for a race that has multiple candidates, do you have every one of those candidates in your editorial board? I'll preface that by saying at my newspaper, which is much smaller and our time was much more squeezed, we would not have candidates that we thought would be wasting our time.
Yes, I think we have made that judgment in recent years, too. When we have a candidate representing, and people are going to be offended by this, of course, but when you have a candidate of a party that has less than 5% of the enrolled voters, for example, would you give that person equal coverage? Would you give them equal time? You're not making a judgment on behalf of your readers if you're doing that. And people will say, well, if you don't give them coverage, you're not going to, of course, no wonder that we have only a two-party system.
We lose the ideas that come from minority parties. But what's missing, of course, in this discussion right now is that the media has changed. You don't just go to your local paper. You don't just go to a national paper if you're talking about a presidential campaign. There's all kinds of ways to get information. Do you really think there's anybody who's not getting covered enough in this cycle so far?
Well, not that I'm looking for them to be covered, but I mentioned Webb and O'Malley. I
mean, Webb just entered.
Yeah.
So that's
where are the profiles of him? Who is Jim Webb?
I mean, it's been 2 weeks. Yeah. Like, you can't even research it in that amount of time.
But he could have already been on cable in some live interview. I'm sure he's dying to be on. I was going to ask you guys this question: if you believe a candidate who is not polling well, but nevertheless has something you believe to be interesting and important to say, would you say to your reporters, let's cover this guy because he has something interesting and important to say?
I think that's Bernie Sanders. Yes, he's gaining, but he has a minuscule support compared to Hillary even now. And yet he is articulate and speaks for a branch of the party that has not been heard from a lot. And he's getting very great coverage.
But does that open the press up if they've made that decision to the complaints of favoritism or bias? Because who says Bernie Sanders is worth all this coverage?
Right.
Who says Trump is worth all this coverage? Well, these assignment editors are saying so because of something that they see. Well, wait a minute. We don't see that, but we see it.
In the last gubernatorial race in New York, I'd say that was the dilemma covering Howie Hawkins, the Green Party candidate, who was raising issues that the other candidates weren't raising, did pretty well for his party 4 years before, and so got some coverage, but of course the Greens would say not enough. And the Greens, I should say, unlike all the other minor parties in New York State, do not give their ballot line to people on the other lines.
Right.
So you can't be cross-endorsed if you're running on the Green Party line. So that is always a difficult decision what to do about the Green Party candidate for governor, because that is a party that has permanent ballot status in New York State.
And you're talking about in the general. You're not even talking about in the primary,
where the
decision had to be made about covering Zephyr Teachout, who was an unknown, relatively speaking.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you want to contribute to this conversation, media@wamc.org is how you communicate with us. And I suspect we'll get some comments on all of this, media@wamc.org, because these are issues that people feel pretty strongly about, and we're interested to hear from you. Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Romeo, and Rex Smith here on The Media Project. We need to talk about something. Speaking of presidential candidates, there is Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin. And in Wisconsin, there was an effort recently that almost slipped through just before the 4th of July weekend, in which the Republican-led legislature was poised to really shut down the state's open records law that would have basically curtailed public access to information.
Those are all big words. What it really means is that everything the legislature and all of the agencies, state agencies in Wisconsin, would have been closed to public scrutiny. They could have acted in secret. It was a sweeping, unprecedented in Wisconsin or any place else in America kind of act.
Yeah. And immediately the media, once they got word of it, the major legacy media outlets sort of leapt into action. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel did not only a front page story, but also an editorial at the top of the front page lambasting these legislators for trying to close down public access. Thank goodness they did that. The legislature pulled back, but announced that the legislature will form a committee to study further action on the issue.
It's not dead yet.
It's not dead yet.
It was always my experience that when a newspaper organization, mine or someone else's, cited open meetings law to challenge a government agency, that many in the public viewed it as a press issue and needed to be educated that this was something that impacted all of the people in the jurisdiction, and that any individual who could file a Freedom of Information request, and more people seem to be doing it. And so it's not just, you know, if you don't give us the information, we won't have a story. We'll figure out another hole to fill in the newspaper. But it's important that this information be out there.
The Wisconsin story is interesting because what Walker and the Republicans seem to want to be hiding is their efforts to repeal the Wisconsin principle, which is this idea that everyone in that state, in every corner, their lives should improve under government. That's the Wisconsin principle. And the governor wants to remove it, in one case, from the motto, from the mission statement of the state university system. So under this rule that they almost passed and that they still will work on, all of the deliberations to take out this sweeping and really kind of grandiose idea would be hidden.
That's
very interesting.
Quite amazing, isn't
it?
How interesting. You know, by the way, the champion of open government in New York State, Bob Freedman.
Bob Freedman.
An arm of the Secretary of State's office called the Committee on Open Government. Bob Freedman makes the point that the majority of public records requests under the state freedom of information law in New York are made by members of the general public, not by the media.
That's true. There's no place in the United States where journalists are the number one user.
There may not be any reporter in this state who doesn't have Bob Freedman's number on speed dial. he is what I would call the hardest working man in show business.
He is a great champion of open government.
Hear, hear. Finally, we need to just take a little note once more of what's going on at Fox News. The longtime leader in Fox News, Bill O'Reilly, well, he still is at the top of the cable news race if you take the whole view of things, 2.5 million viewers a night. But Megyn Kelly, local product, isn't she? She is now number two by just 200,000 viewers fewer, and actually top the ratings of 25 to 54, which is for some reason what the advertisers like. And I don't know if this means that old white guys are falling out of favor. This would be bad news for a couple of us in the room.
I think she benefited greatly by a profile that was in the New York Times magazine that described her as being...
No, she did.
I think
who
so.
Who reads the New York Times and then is a Fox regular?
All right, you got me. But her reputation seems to be built on she is not quite like the rest of them on Fox because she might ambush a conservative, whereas O'Reilly and Hannity wouldn't, and that it's possible that she is drawing more people to her program who would ordinarily not watch Fox.
Well, what a concept.
I would include those six people who do read the New York Times magazine.
She's extremely appealing, visually appealing. She's a good interviewer. I've watched her many times trying to figure out what the appeal is and, you know, to talk about what good interviewing is. She's got it. She's direct. She's blunt. She's researched.
She's a former litigator, so she
a former
has
litigator.
This,
oh, yeah. She knows how to do the parrying back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I'm so much happier that she's more popular and could beat out O'Reilly, who's just A jerk.
Oaf.
He's so rude.
Okay.
He's never rude either.
There we go. Well, that's the end of a quick little program here. Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Romeo, and Rex Smith, thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to write.